Good morning, everyone. This is Smashy Business Show. I'm Wart Ahmed, and I have with me today
Abdul Majid.
And today it's November 15th, Friday, our favorite day of the week. Yeah. How are you feeling today, Majid?
Good. Weekend is always good. We need rest.
Yeah. Truly, truly.
And the business world also needs some rest so they can restart again on Monday.
Yes,
so,
of course.
Yeah, we'll start with the guy in the back,
of course,
Sheikh Hamdan. It was his birthday yesterday.
Yeah, it was his birthday yesterday. And imagine, he spent his birthday meeting with the CEO of X, Linda Yaccarino, to propose to strengthen ties with Elon Musk. So essentially what happened is that he went on LinkedIn and he announced that him and Linda Yaccarino, they had this meeting where they discussed how they can, you know, advance the influence of X in Dubai's media sector and how they can further improve media infrastructure in Dubai. Now, why is this all so important? Now, recently, what we've been seeing is that a lot of these tech leaders, they've been going to Saudi Arabia. Now, just recently, we saw that the CEO of TikTok, he was at the FII8 summit in Riyadh. And just right after, His Highness Sheikh Hamdan, the Crown Prince of Dubai, met up with him. And actually, on November 12th, Yaccarino herself was being hosted by Prince Walid bin Talal.
Yeah.
And we saw that right after His Highness Sheikh Hamdan also had a meeting with her. So what we're seeing here, very interestingly, is that, you know, Dubai, the UAE, it's very aware of the influence that Saudi Arabia has because, of course, for companies to actually set up their regional offices in Saudi Arabia, there's this mandatory requirement for them to set up a regional headquarter in the country to actually even get government contracts. And so Dubai, the UAE, they're seeing this and, you know, this just really does add an entire competitive edge to the story.
It's everyone knew that UAE, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, they've hosted the biggest companies in the region for a lot of years. And Saudi Arabia, obviously, they want their supremacy in all of this now because, again, Saudi Vision 2030, diversification away from oil. So this rule that they applied that you have to set up a regional headquarter in their country to get the government contracts for Saudi Arabian things. And a lot of things are happening in Saudi Arabia. PIF is doing a lot of stuff. NEOM, the biggest construction, entertainment, everything project is being built there. So if you want any contract which is NEOM related, you have to open an office in Saudi Arabia. So some companies have the funds that they can set up, they can maintain their office in Dubai or Abu Dhabi or in the region and then open another office in Saudi Arabia. But some people don't. So they're moving away from other countries, MENA region countries, and UAE is one of the biggest affectees of all of this. Some of the companies, they are preferring to open their even first office in Saudi Arabia now. So a lot of big investment companies, they're moving to the Middle East now because of the big sovereign wealth fund and millions and billions of dollars that are available. So because of that, they would always choose UAE, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, sometimes Sharjah as well. They would always choose this place because it was such a nice business hub. But now, if they want entry into the Middle East market, they're preferring Saudi Arabia. And that is because they want their piece of cake or their slice of the NEOM project, which again, a $1 trillion project. And because of that, a lot of money is flowing in and out of Saudi Arabia. So that's the whole case scenario, basically. The Saudi Arabia, to become a dominant force, they're trying, they've introduced this law. But the good thing is, it's not just that they're nearly forcing people to come in. They have also rewritten their company law, which says that whenever you come to now Saudi Arabia, a lot of people had complaints about the bureaucratic system, the paperwork that had to go through it. So the next story that we're doing about Lulu will also talk about how much the paperwork there is. But yes, because of that change in the company's law and establishing an office in the UAE, they've made it easier. So they're telling people to come set up office. They're making it easier. obviously people are now choosing Saudi Arabia. And again, Riyadh Expo, I usually forget to mention it, but Riyadh Expo is one of the biggest reasons that people are going there, because we remember when Expo 2020 was announced in Dubai, a lot of businesses, a lot of money flew into Dubai because of that. A lot of job opportunities were created. A lot of things happened. The metro actually started building from Jebel Ali towards Expo. So a lot of things happened because of that. That is why Riyadh Expo is also very central to this whole idea.
Yeah,
and so yeah, this is happening.
And just, you know, building on what Majid said of them making it mandatory for these companies to have regional headquarters, all of these schemes that are being set up by Saudi Arabia, they're very carefully plotted. Now, they also have something called the Professional Verification Service. It's basically a larger part of the professional certification program. And what it is that even for the expats who are coming to Saudi Arabia, there is an entire program that is set up for the Saudi Arabian ministry to actually certify that they have qualifications. So everyone who is coming to Saudi Arabia, you have to certify yourself. You have to prove yourself. It's not something that you're just easily handed. And I think that this is so smart because of the fact that it almost adds this sense of exclusivity to living in Saudi Arabia and growing your business there. So we're seeing that all these plans, there's this very diligent touch to them.
Yeah.
That's carefully plotted.
Just ending on the note, yesterday we did a story. If you haven't seen it, go to Smashy Crypto. We have a channel specially dedicated to Smashy cryptocurrencies and all the world of the crypto world, basically the blockchain world. So you can go visit it, Smashy Crypto, on Instagram and everywhere else. So we did a story that Saudi Arabia has more adoption rate for crypto as compared to UAE. But the caveat is, the idea is that UAE still has regulations for crypto. Saudi Arabia, in Saudi Arabia, opening an exchange and doing crypto trading is still banned. But still, they're seeing that the newer generation of Saudi Arabia is doing more, is getting access to more crypto assets. They're buying more crypto. They're going towards that. So sooner or later, we will see maybe Saudi Arabia goes towards that way of regulating it and not like completely banning it. But UAE has an edge that they already have a very well set regulated environment for all the virtual assets. It's not just cryptocurrencies. There's a lot of things, NFTs, tokens. It's a whole economy, the token economy that we call it. So yeah, it's a very, very nice race between these two countries. And it's not like someone is pulling the other one down. It's just each of them is making each other better. That's the good constructive thing about this race between Saudi and UAE. No one is going down. Everyone is getting better.
A constructive competitive race.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that one, but I
just
like
came
it.
Up with it.
I like the sound of it.
Yeah. So let's move on to the main stories now. And Lulu, the IPO that was the biggest IPO in the UAE this year across all exchanges like Dubai Financial Market, Abu Dhabi Securities Exchange, ADX and DFM. This was the biggest IPO that was floated. 25% of the company went public. Then they added 5% increase. They floated 30% of the market. That remaining 5% were bought already by someone. So 25% of the company went to the market, went public. 2.04 was the price range at which all the shares were bought. And the range was between 1.8 and 2.1. So it was bought at a very high range by the people who invested in it. Now, what happened is that they debuted on the ADX yesterday. Trading actually started yesterday on Thursday. So the whole bell thing, the whole ritual that goes into announcing the IPO and the trading part, that happened. But it fell flat. The interesting part was Lulu, which was so hyped up that it will open and it will make records and break records and do whatnot. It fell flat and it closed at the same price at which it opened. So 2.04 was the opening price and it closed at 2.04 dirhams per share. And during the intraday trading throughout the day, it went to a very low of 1.9 or 1.8 something. So it was very fascinating to see that the biggest IPO, which was oversubscribed 25 times. Like, for example, if you had 100 shares, 2,500 people subscribed to it. So it was so much oversubscribed. everyone was waiting for it, but it fell flat. Not to worry, to be honest, for the people who have invested, because I was reading that the idea behind it is that it's sort of a market correction. For example, I'll give you another example of another industry. For example, real estate prices, they keep rising.
Yeah.
And then we say that market will make a correction. So the prices will come to the original value. So it was so much oversubscribed that it was sold at a very high price range. So now within the next week, next 3-4 days, or within the month, we'll see a very good price for it, which will be between the range which was initially offered. So it won't go above and beyond. The market thinks, according to expert, the market thinks that there will be correction. Since it opened at such a high price, it will go down. And it won't go down as bad, like it will drop, but it will go to around 1.8, 1.9, somewhere in the middle, and then it will become stable.
But so, nonetheless, from that, we can still see that this IPO happening, it's a testament to the power of Lulu. And this is such a great local victory for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The most important thing, to be honest, trading can be tricky sometimes. I remember Al-Majid Farood was the biggest IPO that I covered here at Smashy Business. It went live on the Saudi exchange. We talked a lot about it. That IPO was oversubscribed hardly 8x, like 8 times, not like 25%, 25 times oversubscribed like Lulu. But when it went to the market, it started at around 90-ish Saudi riyals, but it on the very first day it went 30% up. That's the limit. You can't go on the price over 30% on the first day of trading. So it went up to 120. The next day, day two, it went up to 130 plus. So the first three days, when stock goes to the stock market, you have a range. You have a limit of 30%. The price can't go more than 30% up. So it went all 3 days, it went up till 30%. So it started with 90, it went up to 125 something, went up to 130 something, went up to 150, and still trading around 140, 150-ish. I can just quickly check for you, Al-Majid for Oud share price. So we saw that as well, that there was no interest, like not like an astronomical interest in it. It was a very important IPO in Saudi exchange, Al-Majid Farood. But it was not like oversubscribed so much like Lulu. There wasn't too much hype around it internationally. But it went very on board. It went up and above.
So hype doesn't always work.
Yeah, so hype doesn't work. The good thing about hype is that Lulu got a lot of money out of it. They got nearly 1.7 billion out of it, which is like 6.7 or 8 billion dirhams. So that's the good part. And now they have a plan. They've announced a plan that they're opening 15 new stores in the UAE this year, by the end of this year, which is like hardly 1.5 months. And next year, they're planning 18 more stores. So they've taken the money, thankfully, and they're using it to expand within UAE and Saudi Arabia. So yeah, that's the story of Lulu. Today, obviously, it's the second day. We'll see more of what happens to Lulu. And we'll tell you on Monday about how the first 2-3 days went for Lulu. Obviously, Saturday and Sunday, the market is closed. But Monday would be the third day. But today's trading will set a nominal price for it. Again, opened at a very high rate. It had to like stay stable. So it's a victory for them that they didn't close on a lower level. They opened at 2.04 and closed at 2.04. So sort of a victory for them. Yeah. One more thing. Sorry.
Last no worries.
Number. It was the highest traded stock on day one as well. So yesterday it was the highest traded stock, and 248 million shares were exchanged. So a lot of trading happened on it. That's the good part. I guess everyone was testing the price. The process is called price discovery. What I was saying, market correction. In stock terms, it's called price discovery, that people keep selling and buying it to see where it will become stable, what is the best price for it. So eventually, it, according to experts, I read 3-4 articles on it. Everyone had their own expert commenting on it, the National Gulf News. Everyone had their own expert talking about it. And everyone had the same consensus that it will come to something about 1.9, 2-ish. So yeah, that's the price that it will deal at. And let's see, maybe when they open new stores by the end of this year, the price may go up. We'll keep you updated.
We'll see, we'll see. And now for our second topic today, Saudi Arabia's public investment fund raises $1.03 billion in a record telecom offering. So essentially what happened is that the public investment fund of Saudi Arabia, they raised this $1.03 billion through the sale of a 2% stake in a telecom giant, STC. Yeah. Now, this actually marked the largest accelerated book-built offering ever in Saudi Arabia and the MENA region.
And PIF again, giant in the world right now, not even in the MENA region. PIF is a giant in the world. Nearly $1 trillion in assets they have right now. It's not a small number. 956 is the exact amount that they talk about. But obviously, the price of stuff that they have under asset management, it keeps increasing and decreasing. So yes, nearly $1 trillion sovereign wealth fund. And you can see the power that only sold 2%. Let's compare it to other stuff.
That's interesting. For just 2%.
Imagine, Talabat is going for IPO on DFM, Dubai Financial Market, the Dubai Stock Exchange, and they're trying to sell 15% of their share, the company share, for $1 billion. 15% for $1 billion. Lulu floated 30% for how many billions of dollars? 1.7. And they just sold 2% and they got $1 billion. So they're a big giant. STC also itself is a very big giant in the telecommunication industry. And STC is not limited to Saudi Arabia. But I went to Saudi Arabia, so I bought a STC SIM, so I remember that because of that. But STC is across the MENA region. They have set up in other countries as well. That's the good thing. And they don't only deal in SIMs and obviously phone connections. They also deal in infrastructure for all of this. So telecom infrastructure, the wiring, the towers, the everything. So they're invested deeply into a lot of stuff. Just to give you a guess around, if 2% goes for 1 billion, the company is valued around 50-ish billion. So STC right now standing price valuation, according to this 2% deal, is around 50 billion. And Saudi PIF, the public investment fund, still holds the majority share. 62% is still with PIF. They floated 3% in 2022 as well, and they got 1 billion-ish around that. So it shows that they sold 2%, 3% actually. So 3% they sold for 1 billion, now 2% they sold for 1 billion. So the company is growing. It's a very big giant in the telecom industry.
It is for sure. And I also believe like this is suggestive of the fact that there is such a growing confidence in Saudi Arabia. Like people really, investors, they really trust that anything in this country is going to succeed. And we see it in every sector. And now we're seeing it in telecom too. Previously, Majid, didn't the... didn't Saudi Arabia's public investment fund, I believe, work with Elon Musk? Did they provide him investment funds for something? Just recently.
X basically has investment from Kingdom Holding Company, which is owned by Saudi Al Waleed bin Talal. That is why Linda Yacarino, I don't know the exact pronunciation. Never heard it say her name. But... that company, Kingdom Holding Company, is owned by Prince Al Waleed bin Talal. He is also the main figure behind the Jeddah Tower. So these guys, they don't like have one company or one singular focus. They're everywhere. So X had interest. They bought something when Twitter was Twitter. And then in 2015, they increased their share in X, which was Twitter back then. And now XAI, which is the AI startup, which is trying to rival OpenAI, the ChatGPT people, they wanted some investment. And I remember Al Waleed bin Talal tweeted that a combined value of $3 billion has been invested by Kingdom Holding Company in X and XAI. So both of them combined, Kingdom Holding Company has invested nearly $3 billion in them. They have their stake in them. Directly, indirectly, it's a Saudi company, obviously. Kingdom Holding Company is one of the oldest companies. And it's not just, again, investing into stuff. They also own a lot of assets, real estate, everything. They literally own everything. So, that's the stake. PIF, I don't... If there is, I don't remember. I'm sorry, but PIF otherwise has like 1 million things they've invested in, and telecom, tech, fintech, all of these are their preference right now.
Mm.
Because even if you see the global numbers, I remember the biggest this year, the biggest funding towards any like tech sector was fintech throughout the world. So fintech is the biggest giant globally right now in terms of investment. So I guess nearly 40% of the global investment, these VC funds, angel investors, these sovereign wealth funds, they've invested nearly 40% of the total till now, like 10 months, in fintech. Everyone is talking about fintech right now. It's the biggest giant right now.
Of course, yeah. For sure. And one of our favorite topics, startups, just speaking of it, Dubai-based chatbots startup Popcorn AI raises $500,000 in a pre-seed funding. Now, where did this funding come from? This funding came from Spring Studios Fund, Salissa Investments, Alwaha Fund of Funds, and angel investors from Saudi Arabia. Now, I find this specifically so interesting because, as Majid said, this is a constructive race.
Yeah.
It's a constructive race, and we're seeing that Saudi Arabia, it's constantly working with Dubai, and we specifically see it through the startup over here.
Yeah.
But you know, Majid, just on the subject of startups in general, what do you think actually makes these startups turn into like mega companies? I always think about this.
See, for Popcorn AI, if we talk about it, how it can become the biggest, I was reading about it, what it does. It basically, in a very nutshell kind of definition, it makes chatbots. So you go to a website now, before you didn't, but now if you go to a website, you'll always see something pop up from the right-hand corner. Or you'll see a picture of a AI guy and you click on it and you can just write something and they'll reply to you or sometimes give you options. Oh, are you talking about this? And eventually you can have a chat. So that reduces the number of humans you need in the backend. I don't know if you know about the call center culture, which was like here 10, 15 years ago. It started with India. The American companies would have their outsourced call center agents in India, in Pakistan, in Bangladesh, in all these countries, because they were cheaper. They could hire 10 call center agents for the same price they could hire one in America. So they were selling everything, duct cleaning. iPhone only came with AT&T connection. There was no other connection that you could put in your iPhone, the initial iPhones 1, 2, and 3. So that came, they were selling that. They were selling literally everything inbound and outbound. So calls coming for help, like if I bought a washing machine from Samsung or some company which is in US, I bought a machine and it's not working or something happens, I call the call center and it's directed to an Indian guy who will be like, hello, I'm Michael from this company. So yeah, I've seen the call centers in Pakistan a lot of my friends run them. So I've been there and they have like pseudo names. It's a very funny thing. There's like stand-ups about it. There's like references to it in modern and old shows about how a call center guy is an Indian guy or a Pakistani guy, and they have a fake accent, and they always talk to you like they're sitting right next in your state in the US. So yeah, that idea mainly is now being used with chatbots.
Yeah.
So it's somehow turned into that, you go to a website, you don't need a human sitting behind and typing everything. You'll have a chatbot who understands all the questions that you can ask and has the answers for all the questions.
I hate chatbots.
They will become better, to be honest.
I'll give you
an example.
I don't feel heard when I use them.
Right now, obviously, see, the first time I saw a chatbot was like 6-7 years ago, which I actually interacted with. And it was very weird. It was picking up terms from my chat and then giving me options. Oh, are you talking about this? So it felt very robotic. Now the chatbots, they've become very advanced. This Popcorn, just to give an example, they did a 400,000 sale. Their AI chatbot, just to tell you, did a $400,000 real estate transaction, only chatbot based. The only human to customer interaction was when they were signing the deal. So from start till end, the whole conversation between the client and the company was handled by the chatbot. So $400,000 for one deal, that's a good sign. I remember there's also one company in the UAE Forgot their name again, sorry. But they have a chatbot. They also published a very good story. Arabian Business covered it. A lot of people covered it. We covered it. That this chatbot made a $1.5 million transaction. And it was, again, from the start till the end. Only the signing process was where a human from the company went. So
chatbots, I find that completely mind-baffling.
It's not mind-baffling, to be honest. It's a very good use of technology because you, as a customer, maybe sales agent or salesperson, you can sell a property in 1, 2, 3 languages. Mm. Maybe someone from Tunisia, we have a guy who speaks 3 languages, French, Arabic, English. He can deal with 3 kinds of clients in 3 languages. A chatbot has like unlimited memory, unlimited languages. Mm. He can deal with you in Chinese.
That's
he can deal
true.
With you in different dialects of a single language. So that is where chatbots come in very helpfully. Mm. The biggest competition that I found for them was there's a startup called Gupshup. Gupshup, in it's a very Hindi-Urdu term, which means just conversation. Mm. It's a very casual term for conversation in Hindi and Urdu. So Gupshup.com, it actually deals with some of the biggest clients in the world. I'll tell you the names. So yeah, Popcorn AI, this guy, very good startup, got funding. It's a pre-seed funding, so he hasn't actually gotten into like big clients. He has some clients right now. I saw it on LinkedIn or somewhere that he is in talks with Amazon or Noon in the region, and they have implemented his chatbot for trial purposes. But Gupshup is like one of the biggest clients that I saw while researching for it. They have everyone using their chatbots. Let me open their website and I'll read the names of. But if you talk about anything, any brand, they have it. MPL, Citibank, Netflix, Flipkart in India. Flipkart is like the Noon of India. Myntra.com, again in Indian, very big Indian. Unilever. Unilever is their client. So these guys, these chatbots are very helpful. Again,
they're very helpful, but now I know why.
Very cost efficient.
For sure. But now I know why Elon Musk said that there's a 10 to 20% chance that AI goes bad.
Why?
Because think about it like this. If they're closing deals now, Majid, they're closing jobs. That's what they're going to do. They're going to close people's jobs. Because if you can carry out such an articulate, important transaction that involves such a large amount of money, then why do you need human beings?
Yeah. Good point. You need human beings in some things. As I always say, the creative work, the human work that actually involves a human, you'll always need humans for that. There will always be a need for human creativity, the brain function that a human has, an AI can never have. But I don't think it's a bad thing. Let's just use technology to become better humans, I guess. That's the main idea, which I think AI brings with it.
I agree with you.
Do you think Gen Z believes in this? I've heard Gen Z has started removing the phones, smartphones, and they've started using. There was actually a report.
To be
about
honest
it.
With you, Majid, I'm more of hang on the paranoid side. I'm one of those people. Like even when I'm on a call, someone listening. When I'm on my laptop, someone watching. So I believe AI. It's a really good tool. Yeah. But I would never necessarily rely on it completely. You can't, I just would not. Even if I could, I would choose not to. Just to preserve the human interactions that we have. Just on like a general note, I wouldn't.
So you think chatbots are not good?
No, I think they're good. I think they're useful. I think they work. Especially if the system in itself, it has many different like keywords that would generate the bot. Because there are some chatbots, they're not good because of the fact that you have to say specific keywords for it to lead you to the right answer. I think they're pretty good. Like for example, the bank that I use Adib, and for their WhatsApp, it's a chatbot.
Yeah.
And I love it. Like sometimes when their app like goes through a lag or like it's updating and I need to transfer money, I just go to the WhatsApp channel and the chatbot is so quick. It works like speed. However, I noticed something. When I have like specific issues with the bank, I'm like, hey, I need to speak to an agent. And then they also have agents. So I think that's like smart use of like, you know, they have the chatbots, but if the issue goes beyond and it's an issue that needs like a back and forth debate, you know, with customer service, they bring in the agent. So I think that human power and chatbots together work amazing, but to just specifically rely on a chat, because imagine like you're a company, right? And you have a really big client. Don't you think that this client will get extremely irritated if they can't talk to somebody? Think about it, like there are some, because I've worked in customer service and there are certain people, they need to speak to somebody, imagine, they need to. If they don't speak to somebody, they are going to be extremely angry. And then you know what they're gonna do next? They're gonna go raise a complaint to somebody higher up. And then you as a company, you're facing complaints from higher up, and that's even a worst case scenario. So yes, chatbots are amazing. They save people time, they save people money, but think like from the company's perspective, because I've, in my time in customer service, I have come across very difficult customers. And the only solution for them, even if the chatbot in itself, whatever it is giving them a certain answer, nope, they want to see somebody. They want to feel validated, you know? Yeah. Like because in customer service, they should feel validated because a customer always comes first in customer service, but they want to hear somebody say, you know what, you're right, we made a mistake here, we're going to make it up to you. And that's not something a chatbot can always do.
What is the median age of these people from your experience? Like, were they old? Were they millennials my age? Were they young? Like, was there a difference of behavior between them?
Customer service? Let me think about this.
To be honest, okay. Older people, they're still very reluctant with technology.
To be honest with you, can I say something, Majid? It was always the customers who were extremely nice that would suddenly switch up. It was always them. The ones who came in being completely difficult, you know, they're having a bad day. I the more I interacted with them, they became nicer, came out happy. But the ones who come in happy, sometimes I'm a bit afraid of them. You never know, to be honest with you. It's actually unpredictable. It's very unpredictable. Even like cultural differences, age differences with customer service, you never know who's going to be a difficult customer. But to be honest with you, I think I had a really good radar for predicting it. You know, I could tell from the second they walked in. I could tell from their face. I knew who was going to be difficult. And you know what I would do? I would just slightly walk away.
Let someone else handle it.
I'd let somebody else handle it. I'd take the other customer. And you know what, Majid? It was just something in my head. I'm like, their face, something is going to go wrong here. I just feel it. It's an energy, even if they're smiling. And you know what would happen? I would see the difficult encounter happen right before my eyes. And I would stand there and be like, wow, I dodged a bullet today. But yeah, with that...
So you have a good sixth sense, right?
I do. No, no. Because I don't like dealing with difficult customers.
Why? I think if I was in customer, I would deal with the most difficult one.
And why?
Just to upskill myself.
Learn how to beat
them there at their game.
But the thing is that I dealt with them. And a lot of the times, their requests are... They're not things that I can do for them.
Oh.
Does that make sense? They're always looking to speak to the highest of highs in the company. Does that
call
make sense? Exactly. Call, like, I know that will happen, and I just, it's not always for me. Do you know what I mean? But it is a really good thing to have patience with people. Oh. Like, how a person interacts with a difficult customer, by the way, determines completely who they are. It does. Because, like, for example, the company that I used to work for, it was Lush. And
yeah.
At Lush... The customer comes first.
This is not a paid promotion.
It's not a paid promotion. But at Lush, the customer comes first. And at first, to be honest with you, I questioned this concept when I first joined. I was like, but what if they're wrong?
Yeah.
But then as I worked more and more with them, I realized that because of the fact that I'm hired for a specific service, the customer is always first. Even if I don't necessarily agree with something that they want, they come first because I'm there to service them. So even if they feel a certain way, I always need to find a solution for them.
So
there's always a solution, by the way.
Do you agree with that? Customer is always right, like 100% of the time.
To be honest with you, they are always right. They are always right because you're hired for a specific job. It's to make them happy.
Oh.
Does that make... You are, because that... Yeah. What are you there for then? You know what I mean? Like, because we're seeing nowadays, because of technology, you can, like, self-serve, right? You can self...
Yeah.
If you're there, you're there to make that person happy.
Mm-hmm.
When they come out of the store, they need to come out with a memorable experience. If you didn't do that, you're not doing your job well.
Oh.
That's just my belief. That's my belief with customer service. Maybe it's too much, but that's my... They are always right. Because when they come in... You as a sales associate, you're there to determine their needs, and you need to make sure these needs are met. If they're not met, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Do you agree with that? Do you think that the customer is always right?
If you're hired to make them happy, like that's the primary JD, yes. But if your JD is to like handle them, not always make them happy, but at least listen to them and try to solve the problem, then like solution based. But yeah, if you're there to make them happy, say yes to everything, then that's your job.
But the happy in itself, it's solution based.
Oh yeah.
Because there's always a solution, by the way. There always is.
What's the best, like most common complaint? I want to return this.
Most common complaint. To be honest, I actually have to think about this. Common complaint. Something going wrong with their skin. They were allergic.
Using the product.
Yeah, they were allergic to it.
And you had it written on the product?
And yes. By the way, Lush, all of their ingredients, they're presented to you. You see every ingredient going into the product. Yeah. And usually it's something
again,
more
not
of
a
like
paid promotion.
But you know what we do when something like that happens? We don't sit there and go like, well, why didn't you read the ingredient list? Oh. Well, that's bad customer service. What you do is that you find something better for them, give them a gift. Because in the end of the day, you know why in this case the customer is right?
Yeah.
Because I should have done my job of being like, are you allergic to anything?
Oh.
Does that make sense?
Like you go to a restaurant and they always ask you, any allergies?
Exactly, exactly. So with customer service, do you see why the customer is always right? Because it was my job, it's my job to make sure. I'm not even working the job right now, but no, I loved it. I loved sales. But with that being said, thank you so much for watching, everyone. This is Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production, a part of the Augustus Media Podcast Network. We have a newsletter on Beehive. We are on Instagram, X, LinkedIn. Please tune in and have a lovely, lovely weekend. Thank you so much for listening.
Bye-bye.